Okay, good. We have a little quiet here. Thank you. Tonight it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker, Father Leo from Long Beach.
Hi, everybody. My name's Leo, and I'm an alcoholic. It's very nice, first of all, to be here at the Arva Group meeting. I remember some years ago when I was a priest here at St. Thomas of Canterbury, and with Carol, Barbara, and we used to come here and have a lot of fun. I hope you continue to have fun. Do you have fun at this meeting?
Yeah.
Yes, very good. Very good, yeah. You know the rules of this? I speak, and you listen. And if you finish before me, you put your hand up. Okay. One of the things that I want to say to everybody who's listening is that for any speaker, it's a joy and a privilege to be able to share. I believe that this program is a spiritual program. And for many of you, there may be some misunderstanding about what spirituality is. When I travel around and speak and talk, one of the biggest problems that many people have is, what does spirituality mean? This is not the time, nor the place, to give a lecture on spirituality. But what I do want to say to you is that spirituality will be revealed in what I'm saying tonight. I believe that spirituality and religion are not the same. Somebody said it beautifully. They said, spirituality is God-given. Religion is man-made. Spirituality brings people together. Religion often divides people. We are not a religious meeting. I happen to be a priest who's an alcoholic. But it doesn't make any difference. I have met people from all over the world, from all cultures and all backgrounds, all sexual orientations, who suffer from the same disease that we do. This is not about being a Christian. It is about being spiritual. I give you a very quick definition before we get moving here. Spirituality is being a positive and creative human being. That's all you need to remember. You need to be positive. Say hello, how are you, nice to see you, nice pair of shoes. Okay, and you're creative. Creative in the way you put out the message. Creative in the way we speak and talk. It's very important for us, especially because we say in the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening, wow, wake up! And we heard somebody read the 12 steps. Nobody ever says, Frank, will you come out and read the 12 standstills? Nobody ever says that. Nobody says that. The reason I'm saying this to you is because spirituality is about steps. It's a journey will never end. You never arrive. And that's the joy, and that's the adventure, and that's the pleasure. You and I, with that spiritual awakening, realize something that's very wonderful, and that we are all special in the eyes of God, the God of our understanding. I speak at a lot of churches. I speak at a lot of Church of Religious Science and Unity churches. Some of you are familiar with them. They say something that's very powerful. Wherever you are, God is. And I believe that is to be true, even though we're not God. So this is a program that is spiritually based. I see some people have not been here very long, not been sober very long. This is a program of remembrance. We meet here to remember. In the Jewish community, they say very often, we remember what happened in the Holocaust so that it will not return. That is exactly the same philosophy behind the meeting of 12 steps, whether it's a step study, a big buck study, whether it's a speaker study, you name it. As far as I'm concerned, It's a remembrance. We meet here to remember what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Now, you probably have gathered by now that I'm not from America. I'm not from Ohio. From a little country called England. A long time ago, somebody said that America and England are two countries, divided by a common language. Sometimes you'll say something doesn't mean the same as me. Sometimes I'll say something doesn't mean the same as you. And at times, it can be very embarrassing. I'm an Episcopalian. I was raised Roman Catholic, but I'm an Episcopalian. And Episcopalians can get married. I'm not married, but Episcopalians can get married. And I have my mother. My mother came over. She's an interesting woman. Some of you may meet her one day. Do you have a mother like my mother? My mother will ask a question. Then she answers her own question. And then she walks away mad. Yeah. But anyway, she came and we decided to invite the bishop and his wife, bishop and his wife for dinner. And the bishop came, and my mother, she behaved all the way through the meal. Till the bishop was getting ready to go. And my mother, she got hold of the bishop by the hand. She said, "Bishop, it's wonderful having you here for dinner. Now please go home and keep your pecker up." Now you probably remember, you know, that the pecker means the nose. So it means hold your head up, you know. In England, it means hold your head up. I gather it does not mean the same in America. Bishop's wife was heard to say, "I wish you could." Every country has its famous trunks. You had Dean Martin. We had Winston Churchill. How many of you knew that Winston Churchill used to drink a bottle of brandy a day? Yeah. Love this story. Winston Churchill was sitting at dinner with Lady Astor, and Lady Astor turned to Winston Churchill and said, Winnie, you're drunk." And Winston Churchill, in his inimitable way, said, "Madam, you are ugly. But I shall wake up sober in the morning." She was very quick. She said to him, Winnie, if I was your wife, I'd put poison in your soup. "Madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it." Now, the only reason I say that to you is because if you look at any joke that's told about alcoholics, you get the disease. You say anyone you want to think, you've got your favorite jokes on alcoholism? Well, I'll tell you, every joke that's revealed reveals the disease, the denial, the manipulation, the arrogance, the tricky-dicky behavior. You look at Winston Churchill jokes and you'll see yourself. How many of us in this room made our families and friends feel that they were the ones that were crazy? Now, I thought to myself, if you can catch the disease in a joke, why can't you catch recovery in a joke? There's a lovely story of a lady in Al-Anon, 4 years. Anybody here from Al-Anon? Anybody here from Al-Anon? My God, we got rid of them. Anyway, she got 4 years in Al-Anon, but she marries badly. She marries a man, very old-fashioned. And on their wedding night, they go to the bedroom. And the man, he takes off his trousers and he throws his trousers in the middle of the bedroom. He says, "Wife, get into those trousers." She says, "I can't get into those trousers." He said, "No. And don't you ever forget who wears the trousers in this marriage." Now, how many years has she got in Al-Anon?
Four.
How many?
Four.
She did no more. She took off her panties. And she threw her panties in the middle of the bedroom. She said, "Husband, get into those panties." He said, "I can't get into those panties." She said, "No, and you won't until you change your attitude." Now you may be thinking, what's panties got to do with recovery? Everything. Now, I want to say to you, because, you know, I'm an Episcopalian, but it's a lovely, this is a nice story. It's about a Roman Catholic community, but there's this one Lutheran. And every Friday night, this Lutheran, when they're all having to eat fish, he's cooking steaks. And he smells terrible, the whole community. What this is? What a mess. And so they work on him to convert this man to Catholicism. Anyway, they're successful. They get the bishop down. And the bishop comes and he says, "You were born a Lutheran. You were raised Lutheran. Now you're a Catholic." The town's delighted. They think, "God, no more smell on Fridays, the meat." Well, would you believe it? The next Friday comes along. They smell meat. So they go to the wall where this Lutheran lives, who's now become a Catholic, and they look over the wall, and they see the Lutheran cooking steaks. And he's saying, "You were born steak. You were raised steak. Now you're fish." Now would that it was so easy to change. There's a big difference, ladies and gentlemen, and you will hear it in this story, between being sober and being dry. This program is not about not drinking. This program is about changing our lives, our attitudes and our behaviors. You notice when I come in here, I always try to do the same. I always try to say hello to people. Sobriety is not the same as being dry. Dry is like a dry leaf. You put any pressure on it, it'll crack. Sobriety is being supple. Being able to bend, change your mind, live, and let live. As you probably know, I go and speak at a lot of meetings, a lot of big conferences. I was in Dallas once and a man met me. He had 6 years driving a Buick. Came to pick me up in a Buick. Sitting with him in the Buick. He's got 6 years. I said, "Nice." He said, "How many years?" I said, 17. Shook hands. He said, "I'm looking forward to you speaking tonight." I said, "I'm looking forward to talking." We're in a Buick. Driving along. We're going along and the lights change from green to red. He said, "God, I hate it when the lights change. I hate it. I said, "Don't worry, they'll change back." That man, not sober, dry. Can you imagine living with him? Drive you crazy. This program, the 12 steps of this program, the traditions, everything about it is changing our attitude and behavior. Alcohol is only mentioned once in the first step. What the program says to me is, I should say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And by the way, I'm listening to what I say. But it's not about me. It's about all of us. Somebody once outside there, just talking to me, said, "Are you nervous at talking to a crowd, people you don't know?" No, I'm not nervous. No. Because you never hurt me. You never made me bleed. You never put me in jail. You never made my mother cry. You never crashed my car. There is one person. One person in this room who I fear. And that is me. And that's the same for you. By the choices that you make, by the friends that you keep, by the way that you live, you will either embrace a positive and creative life, or you will continue to live, even though you never drink, a negative and a destructive life. The choice, as always, is yours. I started to drink when I was about 17, 18 years of age, nothing very extraordinary. I was somebody who drank beer, not because I liked it, not because I got drunk, not because I even particularly enjoyed the taste. But hear me now, I liked how I felt when I drank. I'm not going to be the first speaker to say it. This disease is very much about the feelings. I'm 5'7". 5'8" on a very good day. But when I drank alcohol, I felt 6'2". I felt better, bigger, stronger. I had a stutter when I was young. When I drank, the stutter all went. I thought I'd found a friend in the glass. This friend was going to be with me till the day that I died. And just like many of you, I drank through university, drank through college, and in 1971, in an Anglican, which is Episcopal in England, church, I was let loose on a parish. And just like many of you, yes, just like many of you, I had to have an excuse for why I was drinking. And I said, the lost and the lonely, those sheep without a shepherd, they need me. And I know where they all are. And if you go into a bar dressed like this, people notice you. People say, it's a penguin at the end of the bar. A walking oil slick's just come in. And everybody wants to talk to you. Everybody wants to talk. Even if they don't like a priest, they want to talk to you. People say, you're the kind of priest we like. God sent you to us. You're down to earth like we're down to earth. You drink like we drink. You smoke like we smoke. You throw up like we throw up. People started to go from the bar to church. It's true. As you know, it's normally the other way. But they started to go from the bar to the church. One woman said to her husband, shall we stay at home and listen to Benny Hill? Or shall we go to church and listen to Father Leo? Same thing's going to happen. And it did. You go, I've always said this before, if you're a truck driver here and an alcoholic, there's going to be times you're drunk in your truck. If you're an alcoholic and a nurse, there's going to be times you're drunk in the hospital. If you're an alcoholic and a housewife, there's going to be times you're drunk at home. If you're an alcoholic and a priest, there's going to be times you're drunk doing the services. I remember once doing a funeral, drunk. I followed the coffin into the hole. I tell you, it's real scary when you hear the amens coming from above. But it was an Irish funeral. Nobody cared. Oh, we got a priest in a hole. The priest is in the hole. Let's get the priest out of the hole. Nobody cared. Carried on drinking. But the next time, people were going to get to know. The next time was when I was, I'll say this to you, I was doing a baptism. And it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And everybody, it was a happy time. Happy time. People, friends were there, relatives were there. People flew in. It's a happy time. And then I arrived. Now, I wasn't drunk. Do you know what I mean when you're drunk? I was mellow. You know what I mean when you're mellow? When you're mellow, you don't want anyone telling you what to do, right? Mellow. I said, give me the baby. Give me the baby. I baptize this baby in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, Daphne. I didn't ask anybody. Daphne. The mother, she let loose such a scream. Ah! She said, Father Leo, it's a little boy. I said, I don't care what the hell it is. It's Daphne now. She said, is there anything we can do about it? I said, no. Forever and a day, he will be called Daphne. How do you make amends to a thing like that? Anyway, she called the bishop. Now, you've got to... The bishop's only an employer dressed in purple. She called the bishop. Next day, I got a telephone call from the bishop. Leo, it's my name. I said, yes. He said, I want to see you tomorrow. Put the phone down. I thought, why does the bishop want to see me? I'd forgotten all about this baptism. Then I got it. Promotion. I go to see the bishop, and the bishop says, I've got a letter! A letter! A letter! I said, good. It said it's about you, you fool. What a fool. You're a fool. He said, do you make a habit of baptizing? Little boys with girls' names? Are you sick? Are we talking sick? S-I-C-K-E, sick? Are you demented? Are you having a nervous breakdown? And then he said it, and I know you heard this from somebody. You heard it from somebody. You heard it from your mother, or you heard it from your husband, or your wife, or your friend. You heard it from somebody. He looked at me straight in the eye, straight. And he said, "Had you been drinking? Had you been drinking?" Now see if you can identify with this. Who? Me? I swear on the Bible. No, I swear on the... But he didn't believe me. But he couldn't prove it. He couldn't prove it. You know when you're telling a lie, and you know you're telling a lie, and you know that they know you're telling a lie, but they can't prove it. Anyway, he said, "Is it?" This was in England over 17 years ago. He said, "I don't care what you say." She's not responding. "No." He said, "Quit it." I said, "Quit it." He said, "Quit it." I said, "Quit it. Just quit it." I said, "I'll quit it." He said, "Good, quit it." I said, "It's quit. Quit, quit. Quit it." I said, "Right, quit it. We'll quit it. I'm driving home. Quit it." Now, all I want to share with you with this is, 17 years ago, no AA. Now, you notice this, no AA, no go to AA, no therapist. Quit it. Here's an interesting thing. I stopped drinking for 6 months. Cunning. Baffling. Powerful. And patient. I thought, because I didn't drink for 6 months, I wasn't an alcoholic. I wonder how many of you in this room, who because you didn't drink all day and every day, you're not an alcoholic. Because you don't drink in the morning, you're not an alcoholic. Because you don't drink scotch, you're not an alcoholic. Got to be 35 to be an alcoholic. You know what kills us, you know, 1995? 1995, you know what kills us? Myths. The myths. All these myths about what an alcoholic is. It's not about what you drink, how much you drink, where you drink, or when you drink. It's about its effects. How does it affect you? Go back. First step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Lives have become unmanageable. What does that look like? Do you know some of us in this room never get specific and the disease wins? Some people just keep saying, "Well, it's unmanageable, it's power." How? How? You never forget. I went for 6 months without drinking. And I want to share with you because it's so easy. If you're not surrounded by this message, or you're not surrounded by people who understand the program, or who remind you of the disease of alcoholism, it's so easy. First of all, to think you're not an alcoholic. And secondly, then, to pick up the next drink. I was 6 months without drinking. I went to a party. I'm drinking 7-Up. I'm fizzed out. I'm 7-Up. And now we talk about a coincidence. Celestine prophecy here. Talk about a coincidence. There's somebody at the party, at this 21st party, who knew me years ago. She sees, she said, "What are you drinking? 7-Up? She says, "You used to drink gin and tonic." I says, "I know." She says, "Let me buy you gin and tonic, Father Leo." I said, no, this is fine. She says, "Go on, have a large gin." Okay. That's it. I had a couple of drinks and I went home. Now some of you, I bet some of you thought, "Oh, he's off now, it's off. He's took a drink, it's gone." 10 drinks, I bet. Cunning, baffling, powerful, you believe it now, patient. 2 drinks, I went home, but I left a watch. And they say, well, what's the watch? What's the watch got to do with the drink? Be patient. I'm speaking. I leave the watch. Do you see the watch? In the restroom. And I pick up the telephone the next morning to get the watch. I left the watch in the restroom. Call and ask them, George, got a watch? He said, got it in the restroom. I found a watch. I said, I'm coming to get it. I got to get it. He says, Father Leo, here's your watch. And have one for the road. Now you listen now. Last night, same bar, same barman, could have been the same glass from the same bottle. But two drinks were not enough. When I took that drink on that next night, I needed to drink like an alcoholic drinks. And if you're an alcoholic in this room, you know exactly what I mean. I had a few drinks there, and then I went to another bar and another bar, and I was driving home 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was drunk. As drunk as a skunk. My car hit a tree, and it hit a lamppost. And the car shot up, in the air. Shoop! And two old ladies in a garden said, look, there goes Fowley. That's how he travels, man. But I didn't stay up there. Came down, crash, you know, crash, bang, and crash, bang, and I'm sitting at the side of the road, you follow me, I'm bleeding, hurt. And I had a moment. Now it's a moment. And everybody in this room has had this moment. The moment was I saw myself sitting there bleeding and hurt after the car crash, and I said, I don't want to live like this, I don't want to be like this, and I don't want to die like this. It's a moment. And I believe God was sending those moments many, 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 many times. But you follow me now, this time I grabbed on to that moment. And I've been hanging on to that moment for 17 years. Now, having the moment doesn't mean to say you stay sober. You know why? Because I've met many people who've forgotten that moment. The moment needs to be kept alive, and the moment involves pain. Sometimes people never realize pain is your friend. Pain tells you there's something wrong. Without pain, every one of us in this room would be dead. We came in this room because of emotional, physical, or mental pain. And this program revolves around the remembrance of that pain, not to glory in it. But you can never really understand alcoholism unless you realize that it destroys you physically, mentally, emotionally, the spiritual self. My moment, a car crash. Maybe your moment was when you see the one you love more than anybody else in the world. And she turns round and she's got a black eye and hurt. And you did that. Maybe your moment when it's your mother, your father, who you love and they love you, but they're crying again and again because of your drinking, a moment. Maybe the moment is when you go to get a hold of your child because it's your child. And your child doesn't want to have anything to do with you.
Please turn it over.
Because of your drinking, a moment. Maybe the moment is when you go to get a hold of your child because it's your child. And your child doesn't want to have anything to do with you. Every one of us in this room has a moment, but you hear me now. Don't think by having that moment you will stay sober. You have to feed that moment and keep that moment alive. I went to a treatment center then for 3 months. It's a third of a pregnancy. First month I'd forgotten why I was there. Second month I thought I was the chaplain. I'm walking about like a chaplain. And then there's the man. Here's my second moment. Second one coming up now. You've got many moments. Many moments. Here's my second one. I'm walking around the treatment center thinking I'm a chaplain. And there's a man. He's not a doctor, he's not a nurse, he's not a therapist. He drives a bus. This is a man who drives a bus that takes you to the meetings. He has a flat hat, and in those days you could smoke unchipped cigarettes at the nurse's station. And he was standing there. He sees me walking by and he says, "Hey, Leo, come here." I said, "What do you want, Harry?" He says, "Come here." I said, "What do you want, Harry?" He says, "Come here. I want to tell you something. Come here." I said, "What?" I said, "Leo, you're full of shit." I said, "What? You drive a bus. You know, what do you know, Harry? You're not even qualified. I'm out of here. AMA. I'm going. Out. Then I go to pack. I'm out of here. Hey. Where am I going to go?" So I wait till Harry goes. I go down a couple of hours later. Harry's still there. "Hey, Leo." I said, "What, Harry?" "You're still full of shit, but you can change." I said, "What? But you can change." I never realized that. Tough love. Harry's dead now, but he's still alive for me. Another moment, like the car crash, another moment. You know, you don't come here and remain the same. Father Martin says it beautifully. He came in as a drunken thief. And this man said, "And today I'm a sober thief." Father Martin says, "No. No, no, you cannot remain a thief and be in this program. When you come in this program, you first of all make a choice not to drink. And by the way, you make a choice. Don't ever say to somebody you can't drink, because you can. It's very easy. You just pick up the glass and swallow. That's not complicated. You choose not to drink. Everything about your life now is a choice. You choose not to drink. And you also choose to change. You come in this program a bigot, you don't remain a bigot. Not with this program. You come in this program sexist, homophobic. No, you don't stay here like that. You come in here racist. No. This is about a complete change. Having had a spiritual awakening, you now become a message that's bigger than you and yet involves you. Harry turned round and said to me, he said, "Leo, you can change." And I went to AA meetings, and I have to tell you that when I went to AA meetings, I was open to what was said. I don't know why. What I remember is a young woman, Jewish, spoke at my first meeting, or the meeting that I was at. Different religion, different background, different story, but I have to tell you, it was my story. And I believe that in this program we learn to change. And one of the first things we learn to change about, by the way, is about God. You don't need a God of a pope. You need a God of a priest or a minister or a mullah or a rabbi. You need a God of your understanding. When you think about this, over 50 years ago, a man called Bill and a man called Bob started something that has now embraced so many people. Look at these people here tonight on a Monday night after this rain. And it's based on sharing what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Based on sharing. And what's even more important for me, over 50 years ago, they turned around to Baptists and Catholics who were coming into the program and said, "Listen, find a God that you can understand. A God of your understanding. Sure, you take advice. Sure, you read books. Sure, you listen to lectures. But you know as well as I do, it's got to click. If it doesn't click, you know it. It's not about churches. not about temples, it's not about crosses, it's not even about medallions. It's about something inside of you that realizes that you made mistakes, but you're not a mistake. You are far more powerful than you ever realized. Just give yourself permission to be powerful. And sometimes I hear people say that I need to hand my life over to God. God, take my life. Take my life. Take it. And God's up there in heaven and saying, no. Take my life. No. No. And God looks at you and says, why you return your life? You don't hand your life over to anybody. Live it. I created you to live, not to hand. Live. You turn your life in a new direction. You don't turn it. You don't turn it, it's not going to happen. You're not destined to be sober. You're not specially chosen to be sober. You made moves. God loves the drunk out there tonight as much as he loves you. God loves the person who's sniffing cocaine tonight as much as he loves you. It's not about God loving you. It's about you loving yourself. We admitted. Who admitted? We did. Came to believe. Who came to believe? I came to believe. Made a decision. Who made a decision? I made a decision. It's about you. This program is about you. It's not about God. God doesn't need the program. He's not alcoholic. It's about you. Sure, God's involved, but God's going to be involved anyway. There isn't a tree. Alice Walker says, you cut the tree, I bleed. We know that today. It's about you. And what you're going to do in your life to make the difference. I can remember when I came into this program, I'll tell you something. I heard speakers much better than I am. Challenging, sharing. And I'll tell you, oh, I wanted to be part of that adventure. It's not dull or boring. Sobriety isn't about being bored. It's not about, my name's Jack and I'm an alcoholic. I'm Jack and I'm a recovering alcoholic and I'm glad to share. It's like, it's a bit of excitement here. You tell me, you go, listen here, some people, maybe people 20, 30 years, they start to thank. You listen now, who didn't thank? I want to thank Bill and Bob. And I want to thank Elsie, my wife for 20 years. Oh, thank Elsie. I want to thank Bert, my sponsor. If there was a dog, he'd thank the dog. Who hasn't he thanked? Himself. When you share, when you speak, and you're going to thank, I'll tell you something, especially if you're new practice, write down yourself. Because if I'm not mistaken, you were the one who was shaking. You were the one who was in the jail. You are the one who's made a decision to walk away from a friendship or from a marriage. You are the one who changed jobs and changed friends and changed your lifestyle. Wouldn't it be tragic if even in recovery you were missing yourself? This is about you. It's an exciting program. You take it into your life. I'll tell you, you'll take it into your friendships. Because friendships that don't have something of recovery ain't worth having. You know that right away. You'll take it into your marriage. You'll take it into your family. You'll take it into your job. People like me have taken it into my church. I have a church in Hawthorne, St. George's. 80% recovering. The other 20% should be. I'm serious. The ones who are recovering in the church shine. And I say that because we've got something. A religion without spirituality isn't worth having. I don't want to be part of any institution. I don't want to be part of any group. I don't want to be part of anything that doesn't have a spiritual base. Are we perfect? No. Do we make mistakes? No. Just checking. Of course. We want to have spirituality, being positive and creative in everything that we do. That's what this attracts. When it says it's a program of attraction, you're going to be attracted by people who look miserable? You're going to be... Why would anybody want to get sober to be miserable? Believe you me, look at your face. Every now and again, it's a risk, I know, but try it. Look at your face. There's no point in having spiritual thoughts unless it affects your face. And I mean, people, I can remember when I was for a time in a recovery home in England, I remember a sponsor saying to me, drunks, don't make their bed. You make your bed. Drunks, they don't clean their teeth. You clean your teeth. Drunks, they don't comb their hair. Comb your hair. Spirituality is about you showing respect for yourself. Believe you me, it works. You were late, now you're on time. You were disorganized, now you seek to be organized. You were irresponsible as a drunk, now you seek to be responsible. If you want to know what recovery is, take a good look at the disease. And if you haven't got the guts or the courage to look at this disease, you'll never experience recovery. Only when you look at this disease, honestly, openly, all the pain, all the unmanageability, only when you do that, are you able to see the joy of recovery. Because it's the opposite. Whatever's on this side of the page is the disease. This, the opposite is recovery. If you're a liar, you tell the truth. If you're somebody who abuses people, you seek to heal and nurture people. It's only complicated if you don't want to look at it. This program isn't difficult. I hear people say it's hard to get sober. No, it's not. It's hard to be drunk. It's hard to be an addict. It's hard to be lonely and to wake up in jails. That's hard. This is a piece of cake. All you have to do is see it. God's not difficult. Clergymen are difficult. Priests are difficult. But God's very simple. Because simplicity is next to truth. I end my story by sharing with you, especially some of you who have suffered not only from alcoholism, but with cocaine. Some years ago, I spoke in Georgia. And when I was in Georgia speaking at this big alumna, a young man called David came over to me afterwards, and he was a cocaine addict as well as an alcoholic, and he was in a recovery home, and he had about 4 months. And he shook me by the hand. Shook. Like only a cocaine addict can shake. And he said, Father Leo, I want to thank you for that moment. The moment. When you had the car crash. I said, I remember. He said, I had a moment too, but it wasn't a car crash. I said, what was it? He said, do you believe that God can speak through music? I said, yes. He said, do you think God can speak through songs? I said, sure. He said, well, I had a moment, but it wasn't a car crash. But listening to you now, I see the connection. I was going out to use cocaine. I'd have sold my body for cocaine. And on the radio, there was a song. And that song stopped me. Just like the car crash stopped you. And the words of the song came from the Beatles. And he said, this song now, as we all know, has been made famous by Tina Turner. But the words of the song is what stopped David. And the words of the song were these. When I was a young man, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help. In any way, But now those days have gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind. And I've opened up the door. So help me. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please, help me. There's help here tonight. There's help at AA meetings every night. If you want it, you're going to get exactly what you want. You want just a quick fix, that's all you'll get. You want a program that'll change your life? That's what you'll get. I said to David there was help for me, and he knew there was help for himself. And so it is for you. In this program, you are promised three things. They're very simple to remember. They all begin with L. You will live again like you've never lived before. You will love again, and you'll start to love yourself like you've never loved before. And God willing, you will laugh. Laugh like you've never laughed before. I do a spirituality service once a month for addicts who are interested in a spirituality mass that's based on the principles of AA. If you wish information about that service, see me afterwards. To all of you, I wish you a wonderful 1995, and thank you for listening to me tonight. Thank you.
Okay, let me find my place here. Okay, can we have another round of applause for Father Leo? Thank you very much. A vision for you. Tonight I've asked Don to read a vision for you.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Don, and I am an alcoholic. This is from page 164 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's entitled, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the spirit of the fellowship. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge a road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you till then.
Okay, tonight I'd like to thank Tim for reading Chapter 3, Bill for reading Chapter 5, Les for the 12 Traditions, and I'd especially like to thank our speaker, Father Leo, for sharing. Thank you all for coming tonight. You are cordially invited to return next week when our meeting will be led by another sober alcoholic, and our speaker will be Debbie H. from Long Beach. And after a moment's meditation, I'd like to ask Linda to lead us in a closing prayer.
This is recorded January the 10th, 1995, at Arbor Road Speakers Meeting.
This is a Caskey recording.
For copies of this and other tapes, write P.O. Box 15818, Long Beach, California, 90815.
Right over there. See where the lady with the basket?